The Seductive Language Black Book, Module 4, with Dr. Steve G. Jones. Number 7, The Quicksilver Projection. What do people love most about the world? Don't overthink the question, because the simple answer is themselves. Yes, there can be no greater love in this world than the love of oneself, whether we'd like to admit it or not. We love ourselves so much that we mold our reality based on what we think is acceptable or not. As you can see, our civilization may be flawed in a million ways, but we're still thriving, as evidenced by our ever-increasing population. In the realm of the animal kingdom, the ability to reproduce one's herd is a sign of a species' relative strength. This is where the quicksilver projection comes into play. As a seducer, it's your job to make sure that your outward projection is completely aligned with what the subject considers acceptable, safe, and, most of all, advantageous. This can be accomplished by paying attention to how your subject responds to your communication style and your appearance and your overall handling of yourself during an interaction. Your projection is influenced very little by your educational achievements or success at work. What truly matters when you use your public projection to your full advantage is that you match your nonverbal expressions closely with your subject's own expressions. Again, the rationale behind this technique is quite simple. People crave to see others who are just like them. This is a good example of a deep-seated and instinctual desire that should always be taken into consideration when seducing someone. Additionally, this technique allows people to experience a variety of sensorial representations based on the VAKOG element you're using. What happens after your subject experiences golden moments while interacting with you? Well, there are two main distinct moments in time that you need to pay close attention to, regardless of the seduction technique that you're using, when you meet for the first time. This is where people commit the most mistakes. The common error is coming on too strongly, so much so that the directness of the approach scares away the person and positions you as being too aggressive with your handling of the interaction. Seducers aren't necessarily aggressive. Look at the secret agent James Bond. He has always made it a point to seduce women, but not in the manner that you would expect. He uses bravado, intelligence, and class to break down the resistance of the ladies. He's a gentleman and makes it a point to be indirect and mysterious the first time he makes contact with his subject. Afterward, he shows the ladies that he is capable of so much more than just being mysterious, and then proceeds with going gung-ho with action and excitement. The ladies are swept off their feet as he succeeds in seducing them, at least for the particular story. Fantasies. So many fantasies. Everyone fantasizes about other people after their first meeting. This is the brain's method of analyzing the interaction, so that it can make further decisions as to how to categorize the people involved in the interaction. This is where the golden moments we worked so hard to create come to bat. Golden moments are bound with sensorial representations, and they have the ability to amplify and even distort your subject's ability to remember what took place and what was merely said. For example, if you use vivid sensorial statements while speaking to your subject will remember the unique mental experiences, and these will become permanently associated with your name, face, and the sound of your voice. In the realm of fantasy, where meaning is independently creative and not accorded by any external source, your subject is free to associate as many positive and irresistible qualities as they can to you. The objective truthfulness of these qualities does not matter. What matters is that your subject can create them and accept them as real or believable, regardless of objective circumstances. Don't worry. These familiar fantasies are not likely to impede any proceedings in real life, because your subject will not reveal any of them to you. Fantasies are meant to be enjoyed in one's mind, and sharing something very private with the object of the fantasy is also highly unlikely. We've explored the advantages of being the mystery or enigma in your subject's life. You came out of nowhere and you somehow captured your subject's imagination and desire. Your subject becomes attracted to the puzzles that you create in their mind. There is a completely opposite technique that you may also want to use and try. And you would do this if you feel that you're not going to be effective in being an enigma to your subject. Instead of being mysterious, you're going to be completely open about yourself. We're not just talking about sharing the positive details about yourself and your life. We're going to talk about those positive aspects as well as negative aspects that you won't normally share with others. Vices and past misdeeds may sound distasteful, but they're powerful seduction signals that can dig deeply into your subject's subconscious mind. By being open about every aspect of yourself and your existence, you accomplish the following. Unbelievably, trust. The downside of being a mysterious seducer is that there's always the risk that you may actually be a knife-wielding psycho in disguise. The fear of the unknown is instinctual, and if you're not careful, your subject may begin engaging in negative fantasy, where you are accorded distasteful roles and identities. When you choose to open up to your subject, and you're completely honest with your shortcomings, your subject may be initially averse to the idea that you've done those things, but at the same time, their mental guard is lowered because you've already revealed yourself. Your subject's first impression of you may be affected to a degree, but establishing trust would be easier because you're no longer a mysterious potential threat or danger. Dark desires. One person's shortcomings and shenanigans are often another person's deepest, darkest desires. And while these dark desires are rarely expressed or revealed to other people, they're actually more important to people than their plain everyday desires. The fact that you've already lived the life because you were able to carry out vices and other activities that people won't normally do helps you to crystallize the idea that you're an honest maverick, someone who doesn't hide things and is a safe person to be around. If we switch the situation and you hide your shortcomings only to be found out later, you can expect a completely opposite effect on your subject. Number 8, on becoming the victim. In philosophy, there is a binary called the master-slave dialectic, where one individual is positioned either by themselves or by society as dominant over the second individual. What results is a complex and powerful dynamic between two people. While conflict can arise from this type of relationship, the binary also gives the seducer a unique opportunity to seduce their subject with minimum difficulty. What's up with being a victim? This is an interesting part about the technique. A classical practitioner of influence would want to be dominant in all of their dealings with people. The conventional track for influence involves leadership, which means you're going to position yourself at least one degree higher than your subject. The classical approach works, but not always. There will be situations in which your subject doesn't want to be led because they have strong, dominant personality traits. In this situation, it would be best not to try to dominate the other person, either directly or indirectly. This is where the victim positioning can come in handy. Here's the language formula for this technique. Context leads to subject feedback, which leads to subject position, which leads to position adjustment. Here are some examples of how you can alter your position within the dynamic so your subject will feel that they are seducing you instead of the other way around. Weakness. I've always been poor with figures, but you're just really good at this, aren't you? Like a genius. Flattery. I've never been with someone who can think of so many great things at once. You're one of the best I've ever met. Being overwhelmed. I couldn't possibly handle this by myself. I need your help. I need your expertise. I need you here with me so I can survive this project. Realize that the central concept of the linguistic component of this technique is fairly simple. You take the subject's main position by listening to feedback, and you use it to make it appear that you need the subject's strength or expertise. Obviously, your positioning needs to be realistic because people are generally wary of believing anything that involves flattery. Flattery is considered the influencer's basic tool, and people are aware that it's used in persuasion. How does one become a victim or a weak one in a seduction dynamic? Small signals are all that you need to communicate to your subject that you are the one being seduced by your subject's superior capability and capacity and traits. Remember that you are consciously positioning yourself under the subject's leadership. What this means is that most of the input will come from the subject, not you. To encourage your subject to open up to you, you have to be a little withdrawn or even shy during the conversation. Your subject may feel exasperated that you're withdrawn and you're letting them do all the talking and leading. But in reality, you're waiting for the subject's guard to go down so that you can perform the final act of seduction. This technique works best when combined with more aggressive techniques because once your subject's guard is down, you have to seal the deal by taking control of the situation once again, while your subject still thinks that they have full control of the situation. The transition from victim to natural leader won't be problematic because your subject already has the presupposition that they are in charge and everything that you say and do will require their approval. Wouldn't acknowledging weakness prevent you from seducing someone? No. In fact, you will have to contend with a much bigger challenge if you attempt to hide your weakness while interacting with your subject. Your verbal and nonverbal expressions will likely betray the fact that you're trying to hide a vulnerability. When a person tries to mask their weaknesses, overcompensation often results, and it's difficult to hide this from your subject. Instead of trying to overcompensate, own your weaknesses, use them to your advantage, transform your weaknesses as a function of seduction, or covert influence. Like a partially filled glass, you will be seen by your subject as someone who needs to be filled, and this will even help establish the fact that you need your subject because they have something that you don't. It's wrong to think that you have to be the strongest one in the interaction at all times. Realize that the truly strong individual is the one who can see both sides of the equation and move around the elements as needed. Avoid limiting yourself to a singular path and mode of action. Be a natural leader. But at the same time, be prepared to be the victim at a moment's notice if you notice that your subject is resisting your technique. Here's a caveat. There is such a thing as overdoing things in the art of seduction. Any element or component of seduction that is excessive should be considered potentially problematic. If you overdo any technique, you will be rejected by your subject, period. Remember, the point of seduction, and even classic influence, is to communicate well with your subject. If your strategy is obstructing communication and you become overly concerned with projecting yourself, you're bound to fail with seduction. Your subject should always be at the very center of your efforts. Your subject's feedback is more valuable because your subject's inputs allow you to change tact when something isn't working anymore. Also, let me remind you that timing is of central importance. In the beginning, your subject will be suspicious of your intentions. You have to make your subject feel at ease with you before you can start giving any signals or hints of your true intentions. Remember, seduction is a conditioning process. It paves the way for persuasion and eventually influence. Influence is the highest peak, as it allows you to condition your subject so that they will continue to be aligned with your central intention, even if you are no longer physically present. Number 9, the allure of adventure. Monotony and boredom are two of the biggest enemies of the human mind. A person who is always bored will most likely suffer from flights of fancy and desperation to get out of the boredom, and these ideas will permeate their mind. Every person or subject suffers from at least one type of boredom. The seducer must delve into the subject's mind and discover what kind of adventure is best suited for them. The language that you use has a large impact on your subject's responsiveness. Your words should resonate with the promise of adventure and with hope that boring conditions will finally come to an end. The general formula for this technique is context leads to feedback, which leads to root of boredom, which leads to central desire, which leads to seducer's indirect offer. Here's an example of how you can apply the formula. I understand that you feel lonely and isolated in your new job because you don't know how to get around and you don't know many people yet. You know, this was my story several years ago when I first moved to this city. I was sleeping in a tiny room with almost no furniture and sometimes the ceiling leaked, but that's a story for another day. Suffice it to say, I was very lonely and I knew no one until I met this great guy named Larry. Larry showed me around the city and I began to have fun. Now you're in the same situation too. I'm your guy. I can show you around. I can keep you company day and night. This city can come alive at night. You just have to know where to look and when. This is far from being a boring city. It's vibrant. It's larger than life. You haven't seen that part of the city yet, but I have, and it's amazing. I wish you could see it, and you can. I've been through your experience, and it can be tough, especially in the evenings when work is done and all you hear is the sleepy streets and the buzz of bugs outside your window. Very lonely, right? Okay, so let's analyze the sample monologue so that you can see the individual elements. First of all, I understand that you feel lonely and isolated. This is called repetition and rephrasing, and it's an essential skill used by influencers everywhere, Repeating and paraphrasing your subject's statements builds trust and shows your subject that you were listening to everything that they were saying. If flattery and making people feel good were a game, this step alone gives you 100 points. By the time you're done, you're miles ahead of the competition because your combined praise, flattery, and attentive listening will be irresistible as a package that your subject can't turn away from. Let's analyze more. Suffice it to say, I was very lonely and I knew no one until I met this great guy named Larry. Larry showed me around the city and I began to have fun. This is called subconscious leading, where you use the power of the narrative to position ideal choices and options for your subject. By utilizing the cause and effect relationship, you're essentially showing the subject which direction to go by sharing your own experiences. Your subject may not directly express their agreement with you, but the cause and effect relationship is hard to forget because the conscious half of the human mind thrives on such information. Since our minds are designed to suppress or avoid anything that causes any kind of hardship or resource loss, making an indirect offer to your subject that counters any potential problem is a winning offer. Let's move on. Now you're in the same situation too. This is how you begin establishing similarity with your subject. In very simple terms, demonstrate the similarity and let the thought linger in the air as you quickly move on to the next idea. Seducers must never linger on a certain image, issue, or concept for a long time. Images and concepts must be bright yet fleeting, like dazzling fireworks. We're not afraid of the instant and immediate reaction of your subject. We want your subject to have a vivid mental experience that will continue to stay with them for a long time. The seducer must remain consistent with what they are offering indirectly. You must not swerve left and right, as your subject may become confused as to what they should expect from their engagement with you. Pick a central theme to work on and keep working on the theme until everything about the interaction revolves around it. If your subject deviates from the central theme, gently lead your subject back to utilizing questions that are easy to agree with. Seduction can also be used to expand or extend reality. You heard that right. A means of influence can be applied in such a way that your subject's perception of reality changes and becomes aligned with the view or angle that you've created for them. This is possible because people love daydreaming. Daydreaming, or fantasy, is a means of escape for many people. We daydream because often reality is harsh and it's rare for our emotions to be spared. The seducer's words can become the stuff of fantasy, and if your subject becomes thoroughly engaged in the fantasy of reality that you've created, you become a heroic figure. People are generally very lenient and accommodating to other people who are able to provide the raw stuff of fantasy. When someone gives us hope, we give them the benefit of the doubt, and we sometimes ignore certain things because we want to see the other person in a particular light. Now I'd like you to join me in the next module. I'm Dr. Steve G. Jones, hoping you have an outstanding day.